day, so there will be chances to catch her on the way, but I will take a few questions quickly now. Yes, gentleman over here. And do we have two mics, Gemma, just the one? Okay, we'll go to the gentleman in the glasses in there. Thanks. Okay, yeah.
Thank you for a fantastic talk. In order to reduce working hours, is it also necessary to reduce the work spend cycle and tackle some of the aspects of consumerism, such as advertising?
And let's just take a few questions through there so we can stack them up. Could you pass the mic to the guy in the blue shirt here?
The Pollution Tax Association. In the 90s, I was part of some work for the European Commission, which investigated making VAT employment friendly, effectively by giving tax breaks that were aimed at the lower paid. And we could show that we could cut government expenditure and create employment. If we'd been allowed to go on to do carbon taxes and tax breaks, or subsidies as we called them, I think we could get rid of most unemployment if the carbon tax were high enough. And I believe this would be a mechanism that would be more powerful than changing working hours as a policy, although it would very well work in tandem with that.
And one more question before.
Okay. Michael Phillips-Smith from Quest for Future Solutions. DEFRA's just released a report valuing the economy.
I can't find the person. Hold on.
I'm here.
Okay.
Here I am.
DEFRA's
just released a report about valuing environmental assets. So we now know for a fact that bee pollination is worth £300 million per annum for the United Kingdom. Is that a valid way forward for us to get the balance right between economic stability and environmental protection?
Wow, okay, three very different questions. Work and spend cycle. If you go back and read my chapter on the work and spend cycle in the overworked American, one of the things that you see there is that it's driven by the labor market dynamics. And I do believe that that is the most important thing, so that if people are given, if hours are fixed and people are getting rising incomes, they will spend that income regardless of what's happening on the advertising side. I think they're just, and the overspent American, which was the purpose of the overspent American was to look at the sociological dynamics which made that happen. So my argument there is that inequality and what I call competitive consumption, but pressures to consume coming from the social side are really powerful enough to drive the work and spend cycle. Advertising comes on top of it. So that's my short answer to that question. Not to say that it's not important, but I think it's a much less, my own view is that it's a much less potent driver than what's going on with these economic variables. Certainly, carbon taxes are absolutely essential. And I don't want to imply that we could use a strategy of work time reduction without carbon taxes to get where we need to go. So I absolutely agree with you. Number one policy priority, if we could get them, would be a carbon, a high enough carbon tax. However, it's also the case that, particularly in rich countries, I think, if you continue to have the pressure from the aggregate demand side, we can absorb increases in the price of carbon, say, and continue to increase emissions. So that's where you have the rebound problems and so forth. What's that? Yeah, well, of course, anything...
There's got to be some elasticity between...
There is. Right, but the problem of subsidizing labor is you get more people doing more things, producing more output, and all of that output has an impact. It has an impact on energy use, has an impact on all of those other ecosystems.
And local
yes, so you need a variety of things. You need the taxes, you need the technology change, and you need the change in the dynamics around the work, the labor market. So these are not substitutes. These are complementary policies, absolutely. Ecosystem valuation. You know, I don't like it because it's taking us in the wrong direction, which is the idea that economic valuation should be driving our relationship to the planet. And that is wrong. One of my colleagues, I was on a, gave a talk on Monday, and one of my colleagues asked the question, not that I liked it, but the war on terror. When we decided to put in all these new anti-terrorism policies, we did not ask how much lost output is there going to be for checking shoes in an airport. We never asked the question about the costs of those policies because we thought this is something really important. A bad outcome here is really important. The same thing is true. I mean, it's so much more true about climate. We should. Climate policy is an insurance for the planet. He had another great example. The chance of having a fire in your house is minuscule at this point. We've done so much. We've got all these systems in place. If I tell you that your likelihood of having a fire in your house is one in 250 years, which is the US, I don't know what it is here, it's probably even less here, are you all gonna go out and give up your fire insurance? No. And that's what environmental protection is. It's on climate particularly. So I see why people are going there. In the short term, it's a benefit, but I think the big picture about the environment is that we need to de-link it from economic cost calculations. And it's the right wing, which starting in the 1980s, which says every new environmental regulation has to have an economic impact statement and so on and so forth. And I think the more we rush in that direction, the harder it is going to be to get what we need to do.
Great. Thanks, Juliet. I'm going to take two questions, one here and Hitan there, and then we must close that bit of the day, I'm afraid. So,
thank you very much for talking us through the policy side. One of the questions left is about political strategy. What does your knowledge of the kind of period over the last century where we have seen drops in working hours tell us about political strategy? In particular, is there an alliance to be formed with trade unions who obviously have taken that agenda forward, but who haven't really ever, I think, recently been thinking about the kind of time agenda so much as the pay and conditions agenda?
Again, we'll take the two questions, Julie. Yeah.
Is that on already? I was going to ask if capitalism is the name of the game and what you're talking about seems eminently sensible way to try and manage it, to what extent is the message being heard about reducing working hours and to what extent is it being acted on, and if not, why not?
So the first question is about political strategy, and I think that the coalition that can be constructed has three legs. One is environmentalists, the other is trade unionists, and the third is people who work on families and communities, because an important dimension of the decline of family and community and the stresses there has to do with time. I mean, inequality is the other big part of it, but those two things together. Our non-market sector is starved for time because the market has been sucking up so much of our labor time, basically. So I see that as a potentially very powerful alliance. We're not there yet by any means, but I think that that's a direction to go. It has been difficult, and I would say there are kind of two kinds of reactions, and I'm curious, you know, to see what you all think. Environmentalists are increasingly, I think, open to an understanding of the importance of work time reduction in a strategy for sustainability. Where I think it has gotten more difficult is that kind of austerity mentality in the wealthy countries, which is crazy because we're wealthier than ever, and yet we feel poorer than ever. So that when I published The Overworked American in 1992, almost everyone said, yes, yes, yes. There was very, very little opposition. Now, even progressives are, there's a segment of progressive for whom work time reduction seems infeasible, utopian, et cetera. And that's, you know, 30 years of neoliberal ideology, which has both moved it off the table so that even sort of liberal economists who 30 years ago would have been thinking a lot more in these terms are have forgotten about work time. And there's just more, I think, kind of visceral reaction like, no, no, what we need to do is work harder. So it's become counterintuitive in a way that it wasn't. So I do think there's a big educational dimension. But on the other hand, in periods of high unemployment, work time reduction always comes back as a possible solution, always. So it will, as high unemployment continues, you will begin to hear more about it, I think. And that opens up possibilities.
Julie, thank you very much for a stimulating talk. Julie will be here through the day, so I'm sure very happy to engage in more discussions. The day is partly